And they made me take that out of my book. Now, it was a grand adventure, and growing up with Bert, you know, Bert and I, they'd say that we did fight a lot during the Voyager project. When I told him I was going to take radar along, he almost going to kill me, and we had big controversies about this and that, and different things about weight saving. And he wanted to save weight on any way he could. He wouldn't even give us any radios or anything to operate. But Bert is the inventive genius. He designed that airplane out of carbon fiber, and it had horrible flying qualities, but it had to have horrible flying qualities to achieve 29,000 statute mile range. Think about that a minute. And that was the compromise we had to make. As an example, how I hit this thing nuts. You know, the rudder's supposed to keep the airplane pointy in this way. And the test pilots, you yaw the airplane and see if it's going to straighten out. You yaw an airplane, and generally, there's three things that can happen, and two of them are really bad. But he yawed the airplane, and it hung there for a little while, and almost imperceptibly, it came back to unyawed flight. He nailed it perfectly. And those are the compromises that he did to make that thing possible. Even though the two brothers fought a lot about that, but if you take both Bert and you take Dick, who's the guy that knew what he was facing out over the Pacific Ocean, and Bert was trying to design an airplane to give me the range that would actually work, if you take both of those two brothers and you pour them in a bucket and you stir them up, and what gets poured out was exactly what was required in 1986 to fly the longest flight ever, non-stop, non-refuel flight around the world.
Great, excellent, Dick.
Now, you promised me you won't tell about that story.
Are we ready for questions and answers, or do you?
We're the Rutan brothers. We're ready for anything.
Is that right? You know, it would help a lot if the brightness of our lights would allow us to. Oh, there we go. I can see you.
Take up the audience.
Oh, there is somebody there.
Hello.
Do you want us to bring our chairs up front, or do you?
If you wish, or if you're up to standing
like
some more.
I'm being
By the way, the buses run till 11:15, so you don't have to panic, okay? Raise your hand, we'll come to you.
Oh, come on.
I recall that Charles Lindbergh had remarked that there was an instability in the spirit of St. Louis, and you described an instability in Voyager. And Lindbergh said that instability in the spirit of St. Louis, I believe it was a pitch instability, kept him awake during critical parts of his flight across the Atlantic. Did you experience that similar type of thing where that convolved with the human factors to help conclude that flight successfully?
Yes, and it's an excellent question. And I want to talk just a second about human factors. Now, if you're in a long-duration flight, and fatigue is a big issue. Now, if you're working really hard on something, then you become fatigued, right? But there's another fatigue that's even more devastating, and that is sensory deprivation. When you're sitting here with nothing going on, then the fatigue is overwhelming. And Bert made this airplane with the instability that we had to make this range, that the workload on the Voyager was absolutely perfect to keep it stable. The anxiety, if the autopilot clicks off, maybe it'll start popping up and down like that. And then the thing that keeps you busy, kind of fun, and that is that he told me, he says, nautical mile per pound of fuel, nautical mile per pound of fuel, or nautical inch per gram of fuel. And so there's one speed to fly versus its gross weight to achieve that. And then the other factor is, first of all, you got to fly that speed. Second of all, you got to tune those darn 1938 antique engines to get the very finest fuel specific. And you can sit there and tweak and tweak and tweak. And real quick, I was halfway around the world, and I don't know where we're out, some God lost your shoes ocean. And I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, I'm watching the fuel flow. I'll never forget it. And the fuel flow is 4.2 gallons an hour. And I kept thinking, about worrying about this nightmare that we're not going to make it around the world because of fuel. And this reoccurring nightmare, was that I flew around the world and I landed 100 miles short in a dry lake someplace. One hell of a flight, but we did not technically accomplish our mission. And I never had another chance to repeat it or fix it. And I had to live with that the rest of my life. And I looked in my mirror and I had to shave a guy that got tired and sloppy and knowing in his own heart that he could have done it if he didn't get sloppy. And that thing, that nightmare recurred to me, and I looked at that thing, and I wiped off my hand like it was going to crack a safe, and I says, I'm going to get this thing on that speed, and I'm going to roll it back to 4.1 gallons an hour. And I sat there for about the next 50 minutes, and I tweaked and tweaked and tweaked and tweaked and tweaked, and bingo, I got 4.1 gallons an hour for that airspeed. And then I thought, if we don't make it back, there is no way that Dick is ever going to look in the mirror and say, damn it, Dick, you were sloppy and you could have done it better. And I didn't want to ever live with that.
That's the velvet left arm.
Other questions?
Yeah, we put it in a bag and dumped it overboard. So take care of it. We didn't want it to hit the fan. It's a pusher.
Okay, I've got a question for here. You on your right.
Bert, Dick, there's something you don't know. Every year that you and Mom and Pop came to Oshkosh, in between tent talks, Mom and I would converse, and she'd sit in that old, I think it was a station wagon, okay? So I spent more time with your mother at Oshkosh than probably you did. All right. The other thing is that you remember the exploded view of the Long Easy and the winglet that you sold? You remember that? And you signed it, and you and your wife at the time, Bert, had signed it, and Sally and Dick, you signed it also. Well, your mom, okay, it was safe. We were out at one of these sittings, and I asked her if she would sign it, because I wanted your dad and your dad on one wing and your mom on the other. And she looked up at me and she said, did you know I was a wing walker? And I never looked at her in the eye and doubted a second, okay? But I wanted to share that story with you, and okay. Blessed with it.
Okay, I need to go ahead.
My name is Frank. Frank Giraffes.
Yeah, Frank. I need to formally request a correction. It's actually a zoomed cutaway view, because us rocket people don't use the word exploded.
To your right.
Good evening. I wanted over here to your right. I wanted to ask about your parents. Is that where you, as brothers, got your inspiration from? Was it Mom, Dad, or was it just you two fed off of each other?
No, Mom was an incredible inspiration to both of us. And like Bert talked about, is that we had the most incredible parents, because not one time did they ever say you couldn't do something. And Dad would tell me, he says, I remember you in the farm in Oregon, even in your diapers, you were all out exploring someplace. And he says, you thought there's going to be an explorer. But Mom's inspiration, I'll give you a couple of Mom-isms. If you can dream it, you can do it, and the only way to fail is if you quit. Don't worry about anything you can do nothing about. You've got a couple more.
Yeah, I really do. If we had been born a year or two apart, we're actually more than 5 years.
Well, we were never in the same school together.
Yeah, that's right. We were born. We were 5 years difference. Dick is. I won't tell you how old he is, but I'm 76.
It doesn't matter.
The reason
who's the better looking.
The fact that it was 5 years. I don't remember us ever being truly competitive with each other. There's no way I could compete with my brother. I could sneak out and ride his motorcycle without him knowing. But I really couldn't compete with him, you know. And he started off in the Air Force as a navigator. And before anybody noticed, though, he was a fighter pilot. He did have a very minor role in teaching me to fly while I was going out trying to work towards my private license. He showed up in an Air Force T-34 and took me out at night, and I'd never flown at night. My little Aronca Champ didn't even have lights.